Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another Bald Move Pulp podcast. We are working our way through 1899, the Netflix, possibly timey-wimey, spacey-wacy, minty-dinty episode show. Yeah, season one of it. We're talking about episode 5 and 6 today. Jim, What did you make of this set, this duo, this set of episodes?
I'm more confused than ever. I will say this. Yes. I love the show's format. I love when it seems like each episode there is a mind-blowing reveal that is kind of happening under the soundtrack of a popular rock song. And I love that. Yep. I will say that the most recent one had me... It was less effective for having seen Battlestar Galactica because I associate All Along the Watchtower with Battlestar Galactica. Because the reveal of the final five happens to that song, and it's incredible. But
thank God I don't suffer from this flaw.
but I just love it. I know that every time the music kicks in, I'm about to get something that's going to freshly blow my mind.
Right.
And it seems like that is a pattern that is held through most of the episodes.
Yeah, you want to blow someone's mind, just let them listen to... shit, I just suddenly rapidly forgot who did Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix. You listen to Jimi Hendrix play guitar, it blows people's minds.
Yeah,
my speaking of the brain being so vast to hold oceans, why is it so vast can hold an ocean but so narrow that I can't remember Jimi Hendrix's name on demand?
How many children have you had recently? Because I hear with each birth, it gets harder to remember anything.
Just one 16 years ago, but it did take a lot out of me, apparently.
Apparently.
So are we to the point where we're a little nervous that we still don't know what the fuck is going on with just 2 hours left to go in this first season?
No. I mean, they have okay. Multiple seasons. I expect to be thoroughly confused and even more confused at the end of episode 8.
Yeah. So I'm not that concerned because the middle of any of these, you know, dark/1899 projects seems to be like you're completely adrift. And I remember multiple times when I was making my way through Frisia and Bo Odar's other work, Dark, where I'm like, well, I might be out on this show if I get to the finale and this looks like they're just fucking pissing up a rope or whatever, just wasting my time. And every time I got to the finale, I'm like, fuck no, I'm in for another season. And yeah, that show, after 3 seasons, I thought did everything it needed to do to get. So yeah, I'm going to be loyal to these showrunners until, like, even if there's not a lot of answers at the end of the season, as you mentioned, it's going to be an ongoing series, hopefully. Probably be renewed. It's the number one show on Netflix right now. I just noticed as I sat down to watch the episodes again this morning. So I expect to get the way Dark did it is like they resolved a lot of questions we had during the season, and then they would just kick open a door to like a timeline we didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
Or recontextualize a character or what we understood their mission to be, to set up just so many questions for next season. So like it would be nice to know a little bit about the nature of our reality, this Prometheus project, what protocol 1879 or whatever the thing that they got at the end of this is. It would be nice to get a little few of those answers, but then also to have just giant questions answered, raised and asked as well. So I bet that's what we get.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I continue to think the show looks amazing, is well acted. It is nice that we're getting a little bit more answers about why the characters. I feel like all the characters that were running for something, we now adequately understand their motivations, with a possible exception of Angel and Ramiro.
Yeah, there are clues, like, but It's not certain.
But they haven't actually flashed back to show like how he got the scars in his back and how this Portuguese servant ended up in a priest frock and all that kind of stuff. But we got big answers to and I guess Mrs. Smith is still a question mark. But she's not, maybe she never was a question mark.
Wilson?
She's just a Mrs. Wilson, sorry.
Okay.
I keep on getting her confused with Mrs. Smith, who doesn't exist on the show.
Well, I mean, there's definitely an Agent Smith tie-in at this point with this goo stuff that's coming off the crystalline coal.
Yeah.
Stuff's getting pretty matrixy.
Where do we want to start? Do you want to start with Mara? And what
sure.
we think we know about her. So she thinks that she was a doctor in this mental institution that she claims was built by her father to treat their mother, who apparently every child she had took a piece of out of her in like some kind of literal neuron way to where she got to. And then I guess she had early onset dementia that was also related to this, where she stopped to remember her children's names and faces, and then she couldn't remember anything at all. And her father, in desperation, who found out is Henry Singleton, this guy who owns shipyards and bought these three German cruise liners, it caused him to build this mental facility just to study the brain and try to treat his wife and find some resolution, which I don't think worked. We see a grave that she visits in this kind of like weird tundra hellscape where this mental facility is located at. Do you think that's?
I mean, it just says wake up on it, doesn't it?
Right, but it's got to correspond to a real life location that she's visited, and I assume it's her mother.
I think so. I mean, it's definitely possible her mother is not dead. Because like all this stuff about like the Qyburn, let's say Henry
That's her father.
Singleton, yeah, Henry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is talking about like, oh, if humans just woke up and opened their mind to the full possibilities, they're trapped in a cage of their own perceptions. All of that makes me think that he has like somehow sent her to another place that most human beings cannot conceive of. And aided by this pyramid and this crystalline coal stuff. Like, that's the impression I'm getting.
Do you think that any of what she knows is... Because she says that she used to be a doctor at this facility helping her father, who took a special shine to her out of all of her children. And that for whatever reason, he's turned against her and now is trying to make her think that she was in the mental institution as a patient rather than as a doctor treating it. Do you think any of this stuff is true from her perspective?
I'm going to go with it for now, but I definitely feel like it doesn't have to be true at all. She could just be misremembering. I mean, she doesn't remember her husband, supposedly, who of 12 years.
Well, I wanted to get to that part.
So how reliable is any of her memory?
What I also, because we've been thinking that her brother must be Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, she's got a letter that wasn't addressed to her, loan out of everybody that we've seen on this ship so far. And they gave us a little wrinkle of information this episode.
Yeah, it turns out that's the shortened version of her middle name. So
Henrietta.
It actually was addressed to her.
Right. And her brother used to tease her that she's becoming a little version of her father and would call her Henry to kind of mock her. And that was kind of like something they did as siblings. So this is actually her letter. It was addressed by her brother. Mm-hmm. This isn't something that she's stolen or coming to secondhand. At least we don't think.
But is the letter even real? Yeah, because I'm really torn on
what
which,
does that even mean?
Right. Which reality is real?
Right.
Or if they're both somehow real, if they're like some transportation properties of this pyramid thing. I don't know.
Yeah. It's and then the other bomb that was dropped in terms of relationships is that Daniel, who my earlier operating theory was that Daniel is the boy that grows up, is now claiming that he is her husband of 12 years.
Could possibly still be the boy. I mean, there's
could
nothing
possibly
that
still
rules
be the
that
boy.
Out.
Okay, wasn't there a weird time incest situation in Dark where?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I thought so, too. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility that he is her son, or like that Daniel is the, but also.
Both her son and her husband, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Like, is it possible that her and Daniel are in a relationship that's going to produce the boy, and the boy is actually Daniel? I mean,
totally
I said it's
possible.
Yeah,
I mean, that's essentially what happened in Dark, right? I don't quite remember all the details about it.
I don't remember, but
yeah,
that was one of the ways of stuff that stuff did resolve and work out.
I want to kind of stay on this thread with the, you know, the wife and the boy and the husband and all this, because there's something going on with this pyramid. We get a lot more scenes with the pyramid, and a lot more of Henry talking about the importance of the pyramid and all this stuff, but we don't really get any details to clue us into the purpose of the pyramid. Do you have any theories on this crystalline coal and the pyramid itself? Because when I think of the pyramid, I think very strongly of Egyptian burials of pharaohs and whatnot. And with a dead wife / mother, I can't help but like tie that somehow to the pyramid.
I think that everyone who's gotten a letter on the show is interred in this black pyramid, hooked up into some kind of matrix-like pod, experiencing the shared reality.
Okay.
That's my current theory. And the small version of the pyramid actually might be the full size pyramid.
It totally possible. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what are we even talking
right,
about here?
Right.
Yeah. The thing that, cause they look from a glance, they look almost identical. They're made out of the same substance. They have roughly the same structure, that kind of bumpy, uneven thing. And I'm guessing that the pyramid substance overtaking the reality and like starting to remake it is the effect of Daniel shutting off the ship timer that would reset this thing, and the simulation or whatever the hell is starting to either break down or trying to, like, this is the father's attempt to hack it from the outside to get it to reset and get back.
Yeah, it's super interesting because when in that second episode, when the crystalline coal stuff reaches that panel on the ship, it fires it back up. There's like,
yes,
I want to say there's an electrical component, but what does that even mean in this reality, right? There's some ability of it to restart whatever Daniel was trying to stop. And I can't tell if it's controlled by Henry, because he seems to have some kind of mastery over this stuff, right? When he's talking to his number one and saying, you know, all that stuff about like shifting perspectives, he's holding a piece of this coal, and then it just dematerializes in his hand,
right,
as he's talking at a time when it feels like it was intentional, like he did that to make a point. So he maybe has some control over it, and he's trying to thwart Daniel's attempts to thwart his plan by restarting that machine on the ship.
The first mate, the redheaded guy at the beard, Sebastian, I think is his name. He is totally in on this, to the extent that he's reporting to the father on the mission objective. He has his own little personal fidget spinner that he's able to take control and shut people off. Like, you can slide a certain amount of shirt, and he does it, and Daniel does it to get the coal guy off of his back. You can just shut people off, and they just, like, go stiff as a board and collapse into the ground, which is wild.
That machine can also, like, push people into different realities or perspectives, maybe, because he does that with Ike. Sends him to the woods, right? From the mental
hospital.
He's able
to. You're right. He didn't turn Ike off. He actually shifted him into. He banished him to his woods tunnel.
Yeah.
But the woods tunnel on the Prometheus, not on the. What's the name of the
Kerberos?
The Kerberos. Yeah. There's another thing that happens very early on in the fifth episode where something on the ship receives a transmission and you hear it whir the life and you see the room it's contained in. All you can see is this tiny little portal and it starts glowing and pouring light out. Is that a piece of machinery we've never seen before activating, or is that just another view of the panel room that we just, I thought I got the idea that it's a different location. It's some previously unknown piece of equipment. And quickly after that happens, the alarm sounds and the timer starts kicking down, counting down, tick-tocking, and people start jumping off the ship.
Right. They start eliminating NPCs.
Yeah. That's clearly what happened, by the way, on the Prometheus. That's why the ship has been completely depopulated. Any theories about why that's happening and why some people were immune to it and why some people got infected, I guess, by it later than others? It seemed like everybody would be infected by it eventually.
Yeah, when I was going with the theory that this was like a simulation or something, I was chalking it up to these are just NPCs. These are this is a way to clear the decks, you know, and make the experiment focus down to just the people that they want to experiment on.
Right.
But I don't know, because I'm not really feeling the simulation theory anymore after the end of episode 6, because I don't know what a simulation needs with a whole bunch of boats, with a boat graveyard.
Yeah, what does God need with a starship?
Just despawn the boat, right? Like, you don't need to store unused things anywhere. Just
right, like just if you wanted to get rid of the crew, just have them dissolve like the coal.
Sure.
But that's not possible because this isn't a simulation. This is a recreation of everyone's matter and personalities. I invited you over this weekend to watch this movie Triangle that I've been kind of name checking because I wanted to see, because to me, this is the big, I watched, especially at the end of episode 6, we just see that seascape of just Prometheuses wrecked and destroyed and just all stuck in this one place. That to me implies there is something in the real world happening, because if this is a simulation, why the fuck would you handle unused instances like this?
Yeah. No, I mean, as a coder, I know all about like garbage collection, and then you just eliminate those entities, right? You don't keep them around if you don't ever need them.
This is still taking up resources, you know, and in this weird 1960s control panel thing they got going on.
I don't know. It feels like it's not a simulation to me, but that doesn't answer any questions, right? That just weeds out one of a billion, an infinite number of possibilities that I don't quite understand yet. I want to say one more thing about the pyramid before we move too far astray. Like I said, I do think it's linked to some kind of burial stuff. And I think this is pointed out a little bit when you look at where the pyramid is situated in Henry's reality as he looks out his window from what I assume is that mental hospital is where he's staying. And he sees the pyramid out in the distance. But you take that same view, and I think you're looking at the graveyard that that Mara goes to in her reality. So I think there is a link there from the landscape, too.
Huh. Yeah, because I had a tickle of a theory that, like, because she said my father's always been interested in the brain. And the way she said that, I'd have to watch this. I actually watched these episodes twice because I watched them first because I couldn't wait after Friday as soon as we got to talking. I essentially ordered pizza and started watching them. And then I watched them all again this morning. And I noticed that she mentioned her father was obsessed with understanding the brain. And I don't think that they made it clear whether that obsession started with her mother or preceded the mother. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if he fucked around and made some kind of memetic device that started erasing people's realities inside their brain. And his mother was the first victim, but it started spreading to other people. So you've got the one graveyard that then turns into a pyramid where he's housing all these people who are either falling a victim to it, or he intended them to, and he's plugging them into this machine to do. But they're, you know, I'm running pretty far with a theory I've got. What did you mention? Yeah, what you thought the pyramid is going to be? Any ideas what the pyramid is?
I mean, other than like
just the dead people storage.
That doesn't feel like big enough, right? I think it's visually and thematically tied to her Mora's mother's death, but what it does, I'm not sure yet. I will say it's super interesting. Like, when he's talking about this, Henry says, you know, it's people are imprisoned by their minds' restrictions. And then we find out throughout the course of these episodes that the entirety of the ship, or the entirety of this reality that they that Mara is in with this mental hospital is contained within some kind of room or structure that is built just like the ship's hull.
Within the ship, yeah.
It seems like it's within the ship. Like maybe those tunnels that they go into, those shafts, don't actually lead, you know, mysteriously like through realities, but they just lead into a room on the ship.
But they also can lead off ship. You can go into one and come back and you're on an entirely different ship, or at least the thumb panels allow you to truly shift matter across space. Thing,
yeah.
Because when he shifts the captain to the boat, he comes out not on the not on his ship, the Kerberos, but he comes up on the Prometheus.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's definitely true. I don't know. When I think about it, I'm like, okay, well, if the mind is the prison here and the cage that they're in is this mental hospital reality, or in the case of Ike, it's like his family burning in the woods in the house there. Because I assume if he were to press against the walls of that place, it would also be the same. Like he'd pull the panels off and see the ship's hull. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's literally a ship's hull. They say it looks like the ship's hull, which I agree, but it also could simply be like some kind of cage that's necessary for the experiment that they're doing.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
And now, back with more Bald Move. I thought they also shown like intentionally impossible geometry, like, you know, you peel off, you open up the window and you're looking out, and then you go to a wall at right angles of that window and peel off a panel and it's still ship hull. Like you're surrounded 100% on all sides by ship hull. And even in like where there's not walls, like she at the end when she threw that thing, I forget, what did she throw? And that cracked the... That's right. She had her gun, the captain's gun. She throws the and it cracks reality, and then she finds a seam in reality and pulls it off. And there's a ship hole there too.
Yeah, very true.
Doesn't make show. Doesn't yeah doesn't make a lot of sense. We had thought that the boy and Daniel are working together, and they very well might be, but also the boy is not exactly subordinate to him. He's doing his own thing. He's observing that we've made it further than we ever have before, which is why he brought Mara into the father's reality, I guess, the mental hospital reality, which Daniel was kind of shocked and horrified by, but the boy kind of forlornly mentioned that she doesn't remember. And I'm assuming that means she doesn't remember who they are, and that points to them being father-son. And that relationship with her pretty strongly.
Is it possible that they're both trapped here too, and the thing they're looking for is the pyramid, like the actual pyramid?
But they have a pyramid. Yeah. Well, the father wants the pyramid for sure, and he refers to the boy having the pyramid. He needs the boy. He needs the pyramid he's got. So but they're that's looking why I have the something. Idea of like that's literally the pyramid. But
it could be.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think they're looking for? Because at one point, Daniel says, like, did you find it? And the boy says no.
Yeah, I don't. God damn it. I don't know. what are they trying to find? And they are deathly afraid of the experiment repeating. Or maybe not afraid, but just like it's, that's the thing they're trying to beat. They're trying to keep the ship from resetting so that they, and they've iterated this multiple times, and they're trying to get it right.
They're trying to stop them from sinking the ship. And you talked about how you think this ship has been at the bottom of the ocean at some point.
It definitely looks that way, yeah.
And then how does it get re-raised? Because all these ships are still afloat, that's like the ship graveyard.
And then not for nothing that they're always getting the imperative of sink the ship, sink the ship. Uh-huh. I think that like the other ships are getting sunk. But yeah, there again, why wouldn't you just discard these? Why wouldn't you just make these, you know, unmake these?
Yeah.
Who is the they that are listening? Because like, does Daniel and the boy not know the nature of Mara's father? Because they'd say he is listening, but they unfailingly say they are listening.
That's an interesting point.
That's why the boy is not speaking. But it's interesting because Daniel seems like he has no problem speaking and drawing attention to himself. But maybe he only does that after they realize that they already know that they're... They also say it knows we're here now. Which is another
the weird
pronoun to use to describe a they or a he.
Uh-huh.
It. That's very objectifying.
Yeah. I mean, it could be the pyramid. The pyramid could have a consciousness of its own. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk. Can we talk a little bit more about the coal? Because there's some... Like I mentioned, Neo touching the mirror-esque quality of this coal where you touch it if you're Mrs. Wilson and it starts to cover your body, much like the mirror. But it doesn't do that to Daniel, right? Or sorry, not Daniel, Henry. When he touches the coal, like I mentioned, it does nothing to him and he seems to wield some kind of power over it.
He's the coal master, the coal meister.
Coal master, yeah.
Well, so here's something about Mrs. Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
They find Mrs. Wilson, who no one, as far as I can tell, tied her down or did anything. She's the lone survivor of the TikTok incident on the deck, and she wakes up and says, "Oh, this is something. I felt like I was in a dream." And then she gets the coal attacks her. She doesn't touch it. The coal actually, you know, she gets like an inch away and it like sends out a little spike and injects her thumb with it.
Mm-hmm.
I took it as a matter of gospel that everyone that received the letter is a real person. But I cannot explain why Mrs. Wilson was wandering the top deck unattended without jumping off in some kind of dream fugue state. And then why the coal seemed to deliberately inject her. I'm wondering if she is, quote unquote, a real person or if she is another one of the fail-safe controls that's like only launched when it's some kind of backdoor into the program simulation when they have lost control from the outside.
Maybe.
Because it feels
it's
like
a rogue program like Agent Smith. Sure.
Well, it feels like the Henry's losing patience with Sebastian. Like he is frustrated that he hasn't completed his task and that he's kind of losing control of things and that Daniel and the boy are able to head him all off at the pass. But also I don't understand, like, if he has direct contact with the father, why is he using the up down console? Who is he communicating to? The fucking company? The company is the dad. He's got a direct line of communication, which I guess is breaking protocol. Because Henry did chide him. It's like, you're breaking protocol by doing this. But like, yeah, what the fuck?
That's the question I end every observation with.
Did Daniel also Obi-Wan Kenobi his way onto the engineering deck? He just like swung his leg over a catwalk and fell like at least a story, if not multiple stories. Did you notice that? He doesn't like go down a ladder or climb down. He just gets to a railing and jumps over. And then we see him kind of like arrive at the engineering deck.
All right. So he's the Neo in his black duster.
I don't know, because I thought it was interesting. Also, one of the steam shovelers or the coal shovelers identifies him as the wolf. You know, like him and the garlic guy, who I guess has jumped off a ship now, have been. And why was he immune to the TikTok? But they have been debating about all these monsters and stuff. He identifies Daniel as a wolf and tries to attack him. That's got to be significant, right?
I'm sure it is. I don't know how it connects.
Also, it is a little frustrating, and I don't remember Dark doing this a lot. I feel like Daniel could, like, he could either not say anything or he could say stuff that would make sense to people, but he can't help himself by just saying and doing a bunch of weird shit that's going to get him attacked by people.
Yeah, these episodes are taking some liberties. From that angle, like, you have characters who are questioned. Like, Mara is directly questioned by Ike. Like, tell me, why are you listed on this ship manifest? And she just stares at him blankly, stupidly. And the scene moves on. And then the very next scene, she's grabbing the boy and saying, speak to me, damn it. Why won't you speak to me? Like, you can't have it both ways, lady. You can't not speak to others and then expect this boy to speak to you.
Yeah.
The other liberty that this show is taking, like, serious liberty, and it's kind of throwing me out of it, is at this point, everyone seems to speak the same language, whether they actually do or not. And I don't like that.
But is that showing that, like, something's breaking down, that, like, maybe, that was maybe a big point of the plot, and now that their brains are becoming more synchronized into the thing? Or the other idea sure, is, like,
going well with the pyramid, yeah.
Is it, because I was looking this real carefully. Are we sure that there's actually an understanding happening? Or are you supposed to understand that when the German or the I keep, so we've been calling these people consistently Dutch. They're not Dutch, they're Danish, which is, you know, I'm sure any Dane or Dutchman would be, would understand that there's a distinction there. I don't know if it makes any difference, but they're Danish. Sure. I'm going to try to remember Danish, not Dutch. The Danish father is tearfully confessing about all of his sins and his uncertainty and his doubt and the problems he had with his wife and all that kind of stuff. Is it possible that Ramiro is just not hearing him? He's just listening as a human being and then offering him, like, a blessing. That's because he doesn't say anything other than, hey, your sins have been forgiven. And he gives him a human touch. And the father responds that I'm not certain that they actually do understand what they're saying. Like, When pops off about love and relationships, and to Tove, I don't know that Tove understands her.
No, I don't think they literally understand, but they emotionally understand. That I don't think you could possibly convey the complex emotions that they're trying to convey in these scenes without some shared language. And so it's either the show is taking huge liberties, or, like you said, this is somehow just part of the simulation that they speak different languages.
But, like, I guess, like, I'm trying to put, if I was on a boat with a bunch of strange people that didn't speak my language and just weird shit like this started happening and we're all isolated by our languages, like, there's a dozen languages and only a handful of you, everybody speaks it, and someone comes in this situation is, like, tearfully confessing a bunch of gobbledygook to me, like, I guess I could see myself just giving them a hug and saying it's going to be okay. Not because I'm reacting to what they're saying, but because this is a shitty situation, and why else is this person having a breakdown in front of me, and what else do you do? I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that, like, the second time I was watching, I was really close. Like, am I certain that they're playing this as if they're understanding, or are they just trying to be human beings? And the jury is still kind of out for me on that.
Yeah, they've gone a little too far in that direction for me, unless they right on it,
especially since made it such a big, that it was such a big part of the plot going forward. I have to think it's deliberate, yeah, and it's telling us something, we just don't understand it yet.
I would hope so.
Kind of like the Henrietta kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Henrietta, Mara, what's going on when she's strapped to the treatment chair and they're injecting her in the neck the second time in a first episode, and, like, glitches happen rapid fire? Like, she jerks and the soundtrack jerks and there's a slightly different change of frame. Like, do you have any ideas of, and I've seen this glitching happening before to different characters. Do you have any clue of what we're supposed to understand is happening when glitches are occurring?
I'm not sure, because there seems to be multiple, like, not just two possible realities, but at least three, because I see when everybody's experiencing their previous traumas, right? Before they get the call to wake up, a lot of times that is moment is frozen in time as they're walking around it. And you can see that in Tove's in particular in hers, but I noticed it in Jerome's earlier. So that is like not just a thing that they're experiencing mentally. I think it's more of like, this is a place and time that they're transported to somehow. But you know, it could all be in their heads, I assume. And then you have like the boat reality, and then you have whatever place they go to with the mental hospital and the burned house in the woods, all that stuff. So I don't know, man.
What? Yeah. The one other thing I want to point out that's like, it's not part of the conversation we're having so far, but it's a constraint. To the extent that anything is actually really, the captain says that they're down to 2 days worth of coal and they have to be very judicious if they're going to hope to reach land. Although, again, I don't even know, am I a fool for tracking that? Because none of this is actually real. You can magically make coal if you want. The coal, the ship itself seems to be making coal at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I will say also that matches up with the timeline that the number one, is it Sebastian?
Yes. Yeah,
he's the first officer. The first officer on the ship gives to Henry when he says, like, the experiment will... Does he say...
He has 48
hours left. Be concluded in 48 hours? Yeah.
He's got 48 hours left. So you're right. That does track. That's important.
So when the coal runs out, the experiment ends, or whatever it is?
Yeah. There's hardly anyone left alive at this ship. We're down to like cast now.
What he says there, hold on. He says approximately 48 hours for the transfer.
Right.
For the transfer. What is the transfer?
Is he trying to resurrect his wife? Is he trying to get
as a boat?
like generate some kind of empty vessel to transfer his wife's mind into. And one of the everyone that got a letter is a suitable host.
And is this 48 hours, 2 days of coal thing a red herring because the timelines don't line up that way because they're in different realities? Or
that's true too. Yeah,
you know, I just couldn't help but notice 48 hours equals 20 equals 2 days. So
no, you're completely right about that.
Yeah, that's the one thing I've learned in my life. 48 hours equals 2 days.
I want to talk about a couple of things here. We found out, I want to talk about the backstories because we've talked about so far just a mechanic, the, you know, mechanistic part of the plot. I want to talk about the character development. Lucien, we found out for whatever reason has some sort of inoperable brain cancer. I think it's some kind of tumor in his head that's causing him the seizures and is giving him just days to live. And he has got a desperation trip where he's going to the one doctor in America who thinks he has in 1899 the technology to open up someone's brain and start cutting slices out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to get there. So that's why he was so aghast at the idea of turning around, because that would probably kill him.
Yeah. And I had to note in this scene, he specifically says the doctor's never done this on a live patient. He's only done it on cadavers.
Dead? Are these all dead people? Are these all parts of the experiment? They're actually, Henry is the doctor. It wouldn't surprise me if we met the doctor and it was Henry. The other thing, Clem, you know, is the other side of this where, you know, he confesses that he does love her. He always loves her. That's the problem, is that he feels like he can never have her because, number one, the class gulf that's between them, they imply there's something there, that he's a man of nothing and he's pretending to be a man of means, and like that's starting to catch up to him. And also the fact that he's just dying. And her, from her standpoint, always thought that, you know, getting married would be this dream. You know, you fall in love, you get married, you have children, you get a house, and like it's turning into a nightmare because Lucien is so distant, and she's talking to this to Tove. At the end, she observes that men invented skirts so that we couldn't run from them and provide, I think it's implied, easy access to our bits. And she responds by ripping off her skirt and putting on, I think, Lucen's pants. He's literally putting on the pants in a relationship. And they frame it heroically as if she straps some pants on. Like I wrote in my note, she thrums with power. But then it never goes anywhere.
Yeah, not yet. But I assume she's going to kick some ass at some point. But
she hasn't. I mean, I don't know. She doesn't seem like she's capable of kicking that much ass. But then again, I guess maybe she's. I mean, there's well-armed people. There's well-armed people in this ship running around. Some of these dudes, like, you know, move coal by the ton. For and then, you know, she's the Miss Umbrella. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, she could just be preparing to run, right? That's the context there.
It didn't feel, it felt like more of a powerful thing. And it's just like something like putting on the pants, or who wears the pants in a relationship is such a, I don't know if it's an idiom in German, but like it stuck out like a sore thumb from their other material.
Like, yeah, because it seems like just it seems like it's just a blow to the patriarchy, right? Which the show's not doing that, but also it doesn't seem like that's the entire point of this. So
that's true. But I guess it is a lot about women busting barriers, because we had, Mara couldn't practice medicine. She could only learn about medicine. And you had the little girl, Ada, saying that she wanted to be a doctor when she went to America. And now you got a woman putting on pants. I guess it is a bit of a piece.
But I honestly don't know when this stuff is set, right? Like, we see 1899 is when the ship stuff is happening. But clearly it's in the future in Henry's reality.
From the external perspective, yeah.
But it must be even further in the future than we think, because those panels, those things that are like constructing this reality, the mental hospital, those are technology we don't even have right now. I'm not
right.
Or we're borderline on it, right? Like the volume is kind of what I'm thinking. They're essentially in the volume in that space.
I thought that was I kept on seeing that too, is like, is this a kind of a subtle commentary about the volume? That you've got this seemingly infinite-looking space, and it actually is very much hard walls with panels, and it's a little bit of meta commentary. Like, you know, they started using the volume and just kind of rolling that concept into their show.
It's possible. But I don't know. I'm trying to figure out when this is set. It almost seems like it's set in 2022. Henry just likes this old-school tech.
I guess we should talk about Tove, too. So that was the other... What is the deal with Tove and Henrik and her mother and father? The father first explains that her mother used to be sane, and then they went through an experience, which we're going to find out here in a minute, that kind of broke her, and she suddenly started hearing God speak to her. And God had big plans for them, apparently involving moving to America. And then we found out the event is... I think my understanding is Henrik was messing around with the landowner who they were farming. They were like sharecropping. He messed around sexually with his son, and he comes and blames him for stealing his son's innocence, and then takes a rifle and says he's going to take something from all of them. And it appears he tied up the family to a wagon and made them watch him sexually assault Tove.
Yeah.
Presumably how she got pregnant, although
I assume.
Did he arrive at the moment that she smashed him in the head with the brick? Because my thing is like, are we supposed to understand that she actually got? I think the show wants us to assume that, but it's a kind of a sloppy inference, I think.
Which feels intentional,
right? Yeah, because he died before I think he could complete the act.
That's the thing I learned from watching Dark is about these creators is there are things that seem like they just didn't fill in that detail because they expect us to infer it, but they expected us to infer it so that they could twist it later. Yeah. So I'm with you. I don't necessarily think this baby came from that, but it's possible.
Right.
Also, there's not a lot you could do about that in 1899.
These episodes. So this is how Henrik gets shot in the face, because the farmer, before he does all this, he also shoots Crestor and doesn't shoot him in the head, just like shoots him in the face. Right? He's got the facial scar. What's the other thing I wanted to say about? It made me like Henrik a little bit less, because I've been sympathetic. But when he kind of flippantly tells his sister before he jumps off the ship that you've killed before, because she's kind of like saying like you've lost your mind. You were complicit in the death of this little boy when they thought that he was dead. When you find out later how she killed and who and what circumstance, like what kind of asshole compares I got into this big superstitious craze whipped up by my stupid mother who I know is crazy and I threw a little boy off versus you killed your rapist in self-defense because he was probably going to murder your whole family. Like, I don't know. There's the difference between those two moral conundrums.
100%.
But I don't know. I thought Henrik was going to be a major piece Kester. Of the puzzle.
Kester is who you're Kester. Talking about.
Is it Kester?
Krester. Krester.
What have I been calling him?
Henrik. I don't know where you got
Henrik?
That.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Was that the guy in Dark? Yeah. Probably. I thought he was going to be a major player, and it seems like he is an NPC.
Yeah. No, he jumped. But there's no saying he won't come back. You know, this doesn't feel very final.
It does sideline him for a big part of the plot, though.
Yeah, it does. But when you consider like, oh, all these people were supposedly on the Prometheus anyway. And this is a repeat of the Prometheus, which has just happened like dozens of times, as best we can tell. I expect him to be back at some point. But yeah, it did make me like him a little less, quite a bit less. You know who these episodes really made me hate?
Who?
Tove's mom. There's something about religious self-righteousness that gets under my fucking skin.
It's because there's nothing you can, like nothing else. There's no changing it. There's no arguing with it. And there's no, you can't logic someone or reason someone out of something that they never logicked or reasoned themselves into.
Exactly. And it's especially angering because all of the things she's saying are just self-justifications for her own actions. Like this idea that like history, something about like justice always proves the victor's right or history always proves the victor's justified.
I'm like, the survivors justify hit. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you not understand what you're saying? Have you thought even for a second about the words coming out of your mouth? Because they are just pure justification for your own actions. Excuses for your own actions. I cannot tell you that it has a lot in common with The Mist, and The Mist is another just absolutely infuriating movie to me. I get irrationally angry at these people. They're fictional. They're saying stupid shit, and everybody knows it's stupid, but I'm so angry at it.
Well, it probably has something to do with religious people having outsized effect on our life back when we were, you know.
You don't say.
When we're children and we have very little control over our lives, and
that also probably carries over to this very day, right? Like, clearly probably chip on my shoulder, but come on.
Yeah. What do you make of every book on the ship apparently containing the text? It's just repeated over and over and over again in different, you know, fonts and arrangements. May your coffee kick in before reality does.
This is just another way to say, wake up, right? It's, like, coffee is traditionally considered the thing that wakes you up.
Well, I'm like, why is it there? And I'm like, is this like the classic programmer? You know, like I got all this space, all these books to fill in this stupid simulation that no one's going to ever crack open. Uh-huh. I know I'm just going to copy and paste this thing over and over and over and over again. Like, where did it come from? Is this a joke from Henry? Is it somebody, you know, is this a programmer being lazy? Is this the key to the nature of the reality? You just need to drink vast. Everyone's saying, wake up, just drink a bunch of fucking coffee.
I don't. No. I'm going to get back around to the books. Have we thrown out the concept, though, that these ships are like literally the three ships that they brought into dry dock and refitted?
What do you mean? There's more to it than that. But
like, these books aren't physical books that have been placed on this ship during the dry dock when they were installing the machinery.
I don't think anything is physical, with the possible exception of when the father looks out the window and sees the pyramid and he's got all the panels. And that might be a physical space. I literally don't think anything else is.
Okay. So these books aren't physical. They're probably some part of a simulation. I'm not sure about that. Some part of a collective delusion, some part of a an induced alternate reality. Why would someone put that in there in particular, I guess, is the question. Why not put literally lorem ipsum bullshit, nothing gobbledygook?
Because this is almost like taunting them that you're in a simulation or something weird's happening.
Exactly,
like,
why would you
do that to the participants of the study? Unless
why leave breadcrumbs?
Unless that's one of the... Yeah, I wonder if this is like your standard experimental practice where you fuck with one group and then you fuck with another and then you have a control group. You got three ships. One of the ships is the control ship. And then you fuck with one ship, you fuck with the other ship in an opposite way, and then you've got the control group to see what happens. I don't know.
But it seems like I'm two of the groups are identical, right? The Prometheus did have the people from the Kerberos on it at one point.
That's what all evidence points to, yeah. Yeah.
Which makes me think the third ship that we have yet to see is going to be roughly the same, but different slightly in some way.
Because I was like trying to think of like, well, maybe Mara's brother was traveling under an alias and he was kind of being clever by, traveling under her as an alias. And but then I'm like, well, you got Ike Larson. But unless Ike has a brother, Eric, that we find out about. I don't see how they're not literally the same ship. So, yeah, that does kind of put a bucket of cold water on my three ships.
I guess I'm just so confused.
They're also triangle, three sides, three ships, 3 months of dry dock. Jesus spent 3 days in hell before he got into. I mean, there's a lot of. Wow. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that isn't that the canonically? I think what a
is
lot
it
of
true?
Like
is that
the,
true? These, wow,
I at least one denomination thinks that Jesus spent 3 days. Why he spent 3 days dead is he went to hell to try to preach to the. You know, because like there's God. God's got, you know, the people died before Jesus died. You got this massive legal loophole. How are they going to save him? Well, he actually went down to hell and tried to save all of them. They said no thanks, apparently. Or maybe some of them went to heaven. I don't know.
God gives the devil entirely too much power over him.
Only gave Jesus 3 days, though, to try to preach the good news of the gospel in the worst conditions possible.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. And now, back with more Bald Move.
And then we talked about all the ships, the big boneyard of ships, right? We have no idea. Like, that's the biggest problem is like, We watched this movie Triangle, which I think everybody should watch the movie Triangle after you see this show. It's very there's a lot of commonalities. And there's a very similar thing where one of the characters finds out that they're in some kind of, in this case, a time loop of some sort or some kind of purgatory, because they come to locations where, you know, they've done something that there's evidence of it being done before. Like if they've killed a bird, at some point they find a pile of dead birds that they've killed. Or if they wiped their hands on a greasy rag and threw it down, they look down and there's like a pile of greasy rag. This to me feels like that, but that only makes sense because that was happening in a physical space. You had some kind of time loop where things were being copied and copied and copied. Reminded me a lot of this scene at the end, reminded me a lot of late stage Prestige, where you come and there's like just a valley of top hats, you know, and it's like, oh my God, we haven't been transporting. We've been caught, you know, there's a whole reveal of that. This reveal almost, I almost feel like it's put there specifically to say this isn't a simulation. The simulation, which I thought everybody was onto from the jump, is them saying it can't be a simulation because none of this shit makes sense in terms of a simulation.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have all these wrecked ships just parked out in the ocean.
No, it wouldn't make sense. But in what world does it make sense? In what reality would it make sense?
If there is some kind of loop that they're stuck in, and the
like, and this is a physical space, and they can't just get rid of something, they can only move
it. Yeah, so like, what if this is a, you know, there's this the Star Trek episode where Beverly got caught into a time bubble where warp field where the universe are shrinking around her, and there kept on these being this flash of light that she and was trying to suck her in, and she kept on thinking that's something that's trying to kill her. And it gets to where the like it's like she's stuck on the bridge. The universe is just a bridge of the Enterprise. And at the last minute, she realizes that this portal that's open and trying to suck is actually her crewmates trying to rescue her. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that they are in some kind of Bermuda Triangle time warp? And Mara's gotten all confused about her father, and he's actually trying to save her and her brother from some sort of fucking time loop.
All right.
And they are, without meaning to, resisting all of these efforts. And for whatever reason, there's only 48 hours left that they can attempt to continue doing this. Because did you think that Henry looked a little older in when he's got his Imperial? Also, in a stunning coincidence, they've dressed him like the negative version of his character from Andor. Uh-huh. All these people are stomping around in 1970s Imperial officer costumes. Does he look a little older than in the flashbacks where he's like a doctor treating Mara?
Maybe.
I thought he looked older. Maybe. Like he's aged 20, 30 years.
Could be.
So he's lost her and he has spent his entire fortune to try to develop this technology to break into that loop and rescue her. And they only got 48 hours left because reasons.
And then the transfer could be
how they can move them back into the real time. They're transferring them from the time loop to outside.
And maybe the transfer
bubble
happens regardless of whether they're prepared for it or not. And if they don't have conditions just right, it transports them to this ship graveyard or something instead of out of the Bermuda Triangle,
like
back
Triangle
to the reality.
When everyone dies, the reality repeats and the boat comes back. And it's like there's a repeatable, you know, cycle that you can interrupt at a certain point.
All right. All right. I'm liking this. This feels like one of the most coherent theories I have heard. Although, like I said, I do not go out and search for anything on this show. Because I don't want to be spoiled by people who've seen the whole thing.
I stopped doing it this weekend because I thought, like, now that you've had, what, 3, 4, 5 days to turn the puzzle over in your head, like there's probably everyone, you know, there. So I've stayed off of trying because I got 2 more episodes to go and then I can feast on everything. But
yeah, but as far as like theories we've come up with here, I think that is probably the most solid.
The simulation is the strongest theory, but it has weaknesses that can't be explained. Mm-hmm. And of course, this time loop theory probably has other weaknesses because, like, okay, if it's a looping time thing, what's up with the pyramid structure and the coal overtaking the ship, but it does explain the surfeits of Prometheus's.
That could be the key to unraveling what's going on here.
Why would you want to kill everyone on that ship except for the people you're trying to save, though, too? Like, why would there be an imperative to, like, everyone die at the end of a cycle? Because it seems like that's what it's designed to do. Like, that TikTok mechanism just kills everyone on the ship.
Maybe they're narrowing down the scope of their problem. Like, the transfer being something that it takes an immense amount of power or an immense amount of focus on one particular passenger or something. And he's trying to get Mara out of that. And so he's trying to weed out everybody else so they can focus on her.
Here's a statement of fact. Do you agree with it or not? When the boy says they've never gotten further than this, I don't think he's ever gotten out of that box once they lock him into it. Because he was locked in that exact same box with that exact same poker. Everything that's happened since he got out of the box is happening for the first time.
You're talking about when Mara touches the bar or whatever and time freezes.
Time freezes,
you think that's
right.
When that's like a branch that they never have gotten to before?
And is that because he never had the pyramid when he... No, he had the pyramid in that box the first time too, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
Maybe she just didn't try to overcome the will of the crowd?
It's but possible, and the time freeze coincides with also the crystalline coal stuff taking over, right? And encroaching on the reality.
Yeah, when they come out...
That might be another thing that's never happened.
When they come out of that time portal, the glowing portal happens, the coal starts to manifest out of the control panel, and the people start jumping off the ship. What the clock starts ticking down and people start jumping off the ship. That all happens not simultaneously, but it seems like they're all a consequence.
Yeah.
Because that's what Daniel's so upset is, like, I think that's what drew the attention of it when he was saying, it's aware of us now. Like, that has to be because, like, them going through the tunnels and whatnot, they've been going through the tunnels before. And I guess that scarab fucking beetle, that's the key, literally. Like, it can... if you don't have a thumb panel, you are at the mercy of that beetle and it giving you the routes that you're supposed to take. But if you have a thumb panel, you can open up routes at will.
And it seems like you can divert the beetle, because I don't think the beetle was going to the shaft when Mara grabs it, but she grabs it and sets it down in front of the shaft door and it just opens it for her. So it'll open whatever door you set it in front of, maybe.
Yeah.
See, it seems to both be very aware of its surroundings, but also mindless in a weird way.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bo-Odars and Freshes of the world really like people crawling through tunnels and taking them into different planes of reality, don't they?
They love it. They love it. There are a lot of dark hallmarks in the show, for sure.
It is. It's like there is a particular, like, pseudo sci-fi language that they employ.
How are you feeling about it? Like, six episodes in. Are you really enjoying it? Like you were with
I'm
Dark,
engrossed, or? But I do feel like it's I'm and I said this every season of Dark, so it's not a particular... And I kind of said this every season of Leftovers, too. I'm loving this, but I also still have post-traumatic X-Files disorder and loss disorder, and I'm always aware of being held, like, investing so much of my time and mental energy into something that the creator is just fucking around with us. Now, I have ultimate faith because they did the craziest fucking time travel story I've ever heard over a long 30-hour stretch and nailed it. They fucking nailed it. I was completely satisfied at how that turned out. So I have a lot of faith, but I still have, you know, I still have that post-traumatic X-Files disorder, and I am, like, kind of at the point where it's like I'm so exasperated that, like, if things don't make sense after episode 8, it would probably mean me going into season 2 with big like a gym-sized chip on his shoulder about religion, but towards this show.
Gotcha.
I'm not ready to condemn it all and, you know, put into the trash can, but, like, I remember thinking that way about Dark, but at the every season finale, I'm like, holy shit, it answered all the questions I had, but just raised the stakes and made the world so much bigger that, like, I now have more questions.
Totally.
So,
yeah, I'm excited to see where this goes. I think, I have a ton of faith. I'm completely adrift at this point. I don't know where it's going.
How much coal do you have left?
At least 2 episodes worth. And we'll see if they renew it at the end of this season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess we're going to leave 1899 here.
Mm-hmm.
In the now, wherever that is, and we will rejoin you tomorrow, Tuesday, to take in the final 2 episodes And then Thanksgiving will happen and we'll repeat the cycle. And the following week, we'll probably get back with a wrap up podcast because I'm certain that there are.
Yeah.
You know, after we do a bunch of reading and talking with people and consider our feedback, we'll probably have some more questions and answers. So I forgot to mention this last episode, but if you do have some thoughts, if you have gotten to the end and you got some thoughts you want us to consider, some theories, go ahead and send that in to pulp@baldmove.com. I know some people have been watching email and I've been trying to keep my eyes from seeing it, but I see a bunch of people have sent in already. So yeah, pulp@baldmove.com if you want to get in some of your thoughts. So you can claim all the internet points for season two. But that's it for us today. Pulp@baldmove.com. We'll be back tomorrow with episode 7 and 8. And until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.